Good morning. I would like to call this meeting to order. There is a quorum present. Today is March 26, 2026, and we do have a quorum present. We would like to move the approval of the minutes of March 12th with, and Co-Chair Nash, would you like to move those minutes?
So moved.
All right. Is there any discussion to the March 12th minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and the March 12th minutes are adopted. The March 24th minutes have a misspelling of a last name that we would like to correct. On page two, oh, I did it backwards. We'll correct it on the other one. So on March 24th minutes, Co-Chair Nash, may I have a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and the minutes of March 24th are adopted. I would like to call the members' attention that Member Jones, Representative Jones, is participating remotely under House rule, and so she is present with us. Representative Fisher, welcome to the committee. I will move that your bill, House File 3643, be before the committee. Would you like to speak to the bill, or would you like to get the amendments on first?
Good morning, Chair Claiborne. It'd be great to get the amendments on first, please.
Okay, I would like to move the A1 amendment. Representative Fisher, will you tell us what the A1 does?
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. The A1 amendment takes care of getting some date changes on there to make sure that we are getting the right dates and for the appointment of the members on it and for getting the first meeting set. I would ask for your approval.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. There is an A2 amendment. Would you like to speak to the A2 amendment?
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. The A2 amendment fills in a couple of blanks that I had for appropriations. I have the amounts on the amendment there, $86,000. That would come from the general fund to fill in the blanks in the bill, and that will complete, finally, get the rest of it into shape. I would appreciate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion to the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A2 is adopted. To House File 3643 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. Chair Nash, thank you for the opportunity to be here today to present House File 3643. This is a bill that will start looking at the details to establish a Melissa and Mark Hartman Memorial State Park here on the Capitol grounds. There is a lot of work that needs to be done to do that in terms of figuring how do you coordinate different agencies to make sure that we have things working seamlessly. There's a lot of what I call devil in the details that has to be worked out. While the concept seems very straightforward, we need to do a lot of figuring out of those details, and that's why we're putting the work group together so that they can take a look which areas of the Capitol grounds would actually be covered by it, how it would interact with the cap board that is out there, the city of St. Paul's being involved with it along with different agencies that oversee the area. And for some of the agencies, this would be some of the first times they would be interacting with the state grounds here. And so we want to make sure that we get all the details figured out in advance so that we don't have conflicts, so that we can still do the activities, et cetera, that would operate on the grounds as they have now, but also expand and live in the vision of what was originally put in the plan for the entire area of making this more of a regional park. When you take a look at it, many other states, several other states have parks around their Capitol grounds and treat it as a park and for a community center to come together. So this would also move us into that vision that is also in the overall plan that is for the state park area.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. While we have one person who signed up to testify, the director from admin, Julie Barrell, will you please come forward? And I want to clarify the motion. The motion is to move House File 3643 as amended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record, and I apologize, I just messed it up. You'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Clevarn and Co-Chair Nash. My name is Julie Byrell. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Administration. As originally proposed, this legislation would be a substantial change to the operations of the Capitol Complex. And I want to thank Representative Fisher for taking the time to listen and work with us, as well as the Department of Natural Resources and the Capitol Area Architecture and Planning Board and the Historical Society. Admin appreciates the effort to establish a state park on the Capitol Mall, which would honor the legacy of Speaker Emerita Melissa Hortman and Mark Hortman by highlighting the Capitol complex and expanding additional natural resources programming to visitors. The proposed working group will provide a framework for developing recommendations for the future park that balances greater opportunities for public engagement with the operational realities of an urban government facility. As the center of state government in Minnesota, the Capitol complex serves multiple purposes, including hosting large and small rallies and protests, cultural celebrations, commemorative works, historical monuments, as well as welcoming school groups and citizen advocates as they meet with their legislators. The complex is also home to thousands of state employees who work here every day. I'll note that the funding the admin uses to maintain the Capitol Mall, known as in lieu of rent, is experiencing a deficit. So it is important that any recommendations recognize the operational costs and are appropriately funded into the future. This will ensure that the intended objectives can be met. We are glad to be partnering with DNR, Cap Board, Historical Society, and the legislature on the working group, and we look forward to bringing recommendations back to the legislature.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify? Seeing none, member discussion? Is there any discussion to the bill? Okay, the motion is to, I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 3643 as amended to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and House File 3643 as amended is re-referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Bonner, if you'll take the gavel.
All right. We'll give Chair Clevarn just a moment to get settled. And while we do that, I'm going to move that House file 4470 be moved before the body for consideration, and the intention is to move that to Ways and Means. Chair Clevarn, good morning.
Good morning.
All right.
thank
would you like to speak to your bill?
Yes, please. House File 4470 is an appropriation for the Melissa Hortman Memorial, and this would take $800,000 of the Capitol Mall design framework dollars, which have already been allocated, and allow them to be used to create the Melissa Hortman Memorial on the site of the state office building. It is to design a place for individuals to gather, to have lunch, to take respite from the workday, and to be outside in that space. On line 111, you will see that it says that the Cap Board rules would not apply to this particular memorial. And the reason for that is under Cap Board rules, normally the person would have to be deceased for a 10-year period before something like this would be allowed. But I want to make it perfectly clear that this work is being done in conjunction with Cap Board. Cap Board, you will see in line 1.13 and 1.16, would still be responsible for selecting the artist through a competitive process, but they would also, and the memorial would move through the normal design approval process. But the memorial would also entail the consultation with the family to ensure that this is done. Again, these are resources that have already been allocated for this type of work. The difference is that we are actually adding a statue of Melissa Hortman and the deceased members of her family. So the appropriation would be available through June 30th, 2029. So the real thing is the addition of the statue to the work that would already be done on that site. So,
okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. We do not have anyone signed up to testify, so we'll move to member discussion. Are there any members wishing to ask a question? Mm-hmm. Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Cleburne. Line 1.6 does have an $800,000 appropriation. What is left in the tranche of money that was put in there after this would be decremented if it passes into law?
Thank you for asking the question. So it is my understanding in the Capital Mall Design Framework Fund, there is $1,682,000. However, there are trees which are going to be planted in the spring. So another $700,000 will be encumbered to later in the spring for that planting. So you have to deduct that. So you have roughly $900,000 in the account. So any money that would be left over, and remember, we're saying that $800,000 could be used for this. If the cost is less, then it would be used for the other work already allocated as planned.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is obviously a conversation that will be had in Ways and Means, but since you serve on that, what other things that perhaps were going to happen might not happen, just because obviously $800 will take up something that was previously thought about or put forward.
The designs that we are looking at have been created by CapBoard, and this is part of the work. There was an agreement when the Capital Mall Design Framework was passed that, and I believe it was Isaac Schultz who moved this on the floor of the House, that we had to, because we were removing green space, we had to make more green space available for the public to use. And this would be part of that plan that is already in place.
All right. Mr. Chair.
Nothing further.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. This is probably one of the Hortman memorials that I tend to support. But my only question is, if you're able, or maybe somebody else here with the administration, what is the general purpose of a 10-year waiting period? You said that obviously would apply here, but mm-hmm. Why is that normally part of the procedure?
Madam Chair.
I have no idea. It's been something that's been in the plan for a long time, and I honestly was not around when the intention was made, so I couldn't answer that question. It is something we could absolutely ask CapBoard to answer at a future time. Our executive secretary is here. He could answer it.
Rep. Kosnick, do we have the secretary?
Yes. Executive Secretary Dahl. I should say Cedar Lake Dahl. Sorry. Didn't mean to misname you.
All right. We'll let the executive secretary get settled, and mm-hmm. please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Eric Seeliff Dahl, the executive secretary of the Capital Area Architecture Planning Board. Could the member repeat the question?
The 10-year memorial.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. I just wondered what the general idea is or the reasoning for having a 10-year waiting period before something on the Capitol property is named after somebody.
Thank you, Representative.
Executive Seeley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's usually to give enough time to have some context to adding memorials or items to the Capitol Mall. So kind of giving perspective and history and setting that context in the moment there.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to for answering the question and providing a little bit of context. I think the reason that it was stated about providing some additional context in the broader sense has some merit. So while I understand the Hortman, Melissa was a colleague, I think there's some merit to that original thought process of waiting 10 years.
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. Under normal circumstances, I would say I would be in 100% agreement with you. This body should not do things that are, I don't know that I would say reactionary, no. That's not the word I would use. I would say we should do things that are measured and considered. And I think we are at a time when we have suffered the most heinous crime against our body, not only to our dear friend Melissa Hortman, Mark Hortman, and their family, but also to the body itself. This was a political assassination, and it cannot be considered the same as a natural death. It is a trauma that was forced upon our body that we did not want, we did not ask for. And I think recognizing that trauma in this time by honoring our colleague and the family impacted, right? It's not just our colleague. I think it makes a statement to our state at large that this is not something we tolerate. We do not honor the people who commit these crimes. We honor the people who did the good work of our state and who spent countless hours there. And again, I said this in the bonding committee, and I will say it now. These are not bills that are coming from legislators. These are bills that are coming from the community. And we are trying, and when I say community, I mean across our state. The Capitol Mall design framework, of which this statue would be added to, was a multi-year process. And it incorporated many, many ideas and designs. And to the earlier question, the plan itself will be implemented over decades. But in this particular case, adding that statute says we do not agree with political assassinations, and we are supporting our community this way.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. And I think we agree that we want to always make measured decisions. But we also understand, as members of this body, that serving in public office sometimes takes great sacrifice. And we give up a great deal of time with our families to be in our communities, to serve the people at home. And in this case, we know that Speaker Hortman paid the ultimate sacrifice. And so she will not be going home to her family, unfortunately. And so I do appreciate the good questions. Is there any other testimony on this bill before we move to a vote? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Cleburne, for bringing this bill, and just for right now, for your really powerful words in laying out, I think, the case why this is so important. On top of it being that this area, the Capitol grounds, were of such interest in having a exemplary place, such interest to Speaker Hortman. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we will go to a vote. All those in favor of moving House File 4470 to Ways and Means, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. House File 4470 has been referred to Ways and Means. Chair Cleburne, it is quite the red letter day for you. We have now 4462 up for consideration. I'll move that before the body, and the intent is to move that or we refer that to the General Register. And I see that you have an A2. Would you like to move your A2, Chair Cleburne?
Yes, thank you. The A2 amendment is a delete everything amendment, and this is the work of the nonprofit group that we met with all summer and with admin to make sure that we were clarifying and not confusing issues. So it is just to get the bill in the order that we would like it to be in. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A2, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. The ayes have it. The A2 has been adopted. Now that it is in the shape you would like it, Chair Cleburne, would you like to speak to your bill?
Yes, thank you very much. And I would also like this bill would require this. I want to thank Chair Nash also for signing on to this bill. It's an important bill, and it would allow state agencies, or it requires state agencies to include a concise summary page at the beginning of any request for proposal that the agency issues for procurement of goods and services. As stated in House File 4462, the purpose of the summary page is for vendors to quickly assess the scope and requirements of the RFP. I think I just did that wrong. Let me just start again. House File 4462 makes a practical, high-impact improvement in the way that Minnesota state agencies publish grant opportunities. The complexity of the program and materials require organizations to invest significant time to simplify, and this will help simplify and help them understand whether they should apply for a particular grant. House File 4462 is a practical and efficient solution. The bill requires that a template be created and to be used with clear, plain language, a summary page at the beginning of each RFP. This reform will improve transparency, reduce administrative burden, and promote outcomes, better outcomes. When expectations are clear at the start, applicants can better assess their financial and operational risks and whether they should pursue this opportunity. So that's what the bill does.
All right. Thank you, Chair Cleburne. And we do have a testifier here today, Tricia Reinwald.
Yes, please.
If you'd like to step up to the testifier's table, please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Tricia Reinwald. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. Chair Nash and Chair Cleavehorn, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm speaking on behalf of a coalition of nonprofit partners working to improve public-private partnerships in Minnesota. We support House File 4462, which would require the Department of Administration to include a standard summary page at the beginning of requests for proposals. This is a practical, it's a low-cost reform, and it strengthens how state awards and oversees public funds. RFPs routinely run 30 to 50 pages, and critical details are often buried deep in those documents. Things like eligibility, funding amounts, match requirements, payment models. And providers spend dozens of hours reviewing and beginning applications, only to discover late in the process that they're ineligible or the requirements just aren't feasible for them. That wasted effort, it falls both on applicants and the agencies reviewing misaligned submissions. House File 4462, it fixes this. As Chair Cleavehorn mentioned, is by requiring a plain language summary of who's eligible and how much funding is available, the expected award structure, and the major administrative requirements. They're just up front, more providers, before they provide, they invest significant time. So it reduces incomplete bids and resubmissions, creates standardized documentation that strengthens oversight, and protects taxpayer dollars by tightening the link between clear expectations and quality proposals. This approach aligns with the federal standard the Office of Management and Budget adopted in 2024 for all federal funding opportunities. And the return in efficiency, accountability, and stewardship of public resources is worth the small extra step we created by House File 4462. We respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
All right, very good. Then we will move to a member discussion.
Madam Chair.
Chair Cleavon.
Yes, thank you. Each of the members would have received today color printouts of the work.
that has been done over the interim by the nonprofits, Senator Marty and I, and a group of interested parties and the administration. You will see that there is a legislative initiatives decision tool, which I think is probably one of the best things that has come out of this work. It's a decision tree, and it starts at the very beginning with, does the legislator have a conflict of interest? And I think that's really an important piece for us. There is also a legislator guide of questions to ask nonprofits seeking state funding, so you can help determine whether this would be something that we should even be considering. There's a legislator guide for understanding how nonprofits operate, the realities of that work. And then you will see a government grants contract checklist. So, and a timeline of how long these proposals tend to take. So there's a lot of good information for you to use going forward in your work. And this is just the type of work that we like to do in conjunction with our really good nonprofit partners.
All right, thank you for that. And I will say, as an agilist, I really, really appreciate a good decision tree and flow charts, those private-public partnerships. I know a lot of us here are on the Technical Advisory Council, including Chair Nash. And so you're making my heart sing right now with this whole efficiency thing. Love it. All right. It's just plain good government. Do we have any other discussion on the bill before we move? Representative Kruth. Sexton, I'm sorry. Representative Sexton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having written many multi-page RFPs in very large projects, could you explain the vision for, like, say, transportation, a very large highway project, to fit all this information onto a single page? Because it's a lot, and certain information, like the expected number of awards and award size, are there exceptions that we wouldn't necessarily, as the state, want to publish that information?
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. If you will look on the amendment, some of this has been simplified. So we really are highlighting in a very clear way. It's a template that each agency would be required to use, but the information is really about the purpose of the program. And this is information that's already in the document and something that would normally be talked about. It talks about what the eligibility requirements would be, and the award structure, and whatever administrative requirements are there, and what is the process. So you can see on lines 2.4 through 2.9, it's been much more simplified from the beginning bill.
All right. That's
what I wanted to confirm. Yeah. And so thank you for that.
Thank you.
No further questions.
Thank you, Representative Sexton. In essence, we are not burying the lead. We're putting it all right up front. So we appreciate that. Any additional comments? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Claiborne. I think this is a good step. We've got a couple different things chugging along that may actually just wind up getting put together in some amended bill or whatever. But is the Department of Administration still here? I'm curious as to what the cost of this would be. I don't see a fiscal note. And I think there's going to have to be some borne cost somewhere along the way.
Office of Grants Management.
Yes.
Okay. OGM.
Thank you. We do have the Office of Grants Management here. If you want to go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record and go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Betsy Hayes. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Department of Administration. And to your question, Representative Nash, we do not anticipate that there would be a significant fiscal impact that we couldn't absorb in this matter. This is a template, in fact, that the working coalition that we've been meeting with already has worked with us to put together a template that we could start with, and we're going to continue discussions on that, and it's a simple matter of creating a template with these items on there so that the agencies can use them and simplify the process and make that tool available for that quick glance for the benefit of the grantees. We do not anticipate a cost to that.
Fantastic. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Co-Chair Nash. All right, fantastic. I think we all love the word free. All right. All right. Anyway, do we have any further discussion before we move to the vote? If not, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 4462, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the ayes have it. House File 4462 has been re-referred to the General Register. And with that, we are going to move on to House File 4366. We will move that before the committee for consideration, and our intent is to re-refer that to the General Register as well. And Chair Cleavorn, I see you have an A1 amendment.
I do have an A1 amendment. The A1 amendment changes the date on line 1.17 from 2025 to 2024.
Okay. Any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, we will go ahead to adopt the A2 amendment. The A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the ayes have it. The A1 has been amended. Chair Cleavorn, to your bill.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to refer the members to the letter of March 23, 2026 that is in your packet. And I'm just going to read a few lines from that, which I think helps describe why this bill is necessary. This letter was written by Bill Struzinski with the Friends of Minnesota Public Radio. House File 4366 is a technical bill relating to the criteria that must be met to receive public television grants. Unfortunately, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting no longer is a viable federal entity. The purpose of House File 4366 is simple. Any public television station who was certified by the Corporation of Public Broadcasting in 2024 would still be eligible to receive state grants. This is definitely a technical fix designed to keep PBS stations in compliance with the state-mandated grant criteria. And so if you were to look on lines 1.16, you will see that we are moving from present tense to past tense. And that is the sum total of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. We do not have any testifiers on this bill. Do we have any member discussion? All right, seeing none. All right, well, thank you, Chair Cleavorn and Chair Nash. We will go ahead then and make a motion to re-renew House File 4366 as amended, be referred to the General Registers. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And the ayes have it. House File 4366, as amended, has been moved to the General Register. And next, we are going to take up House File 4172. I will move to bring that before the body. And the intent is to move that as well to the General Register. I do not see any amendments to the bill. So Chair Cleavorn, to the bill.
Thank you very much. Well, first, I'm going to say what the bill does, and then I will talk about why I'm bringing the bill forward. This bill would prohibit the assignment of legislative email addresses, telephone numbers, and offices to anyone who is not a member, officer, or employee of the Senate or House of Representatives. The legislative telephone number assigned to a senator or representative would only be for the exclusive use and, if authorized by the member, by an employee assigned to the member. Members, officers, and employees would be prohibited from allowing a contractor or other persons to office in legislative space without prior written notification to the leaders of each caucus. House File 4172 would direct the Senate and the House of Representatives to adopt rules to implement this section and must also include remedies for violations. These remedies would be exclusive and no court or administrative agency would have authority to act upon a violation or otherwise interpret this section of law. Okay, so that's really what the bill does. Now, I'd like to say that this is a forward looking bill. I'm not here to litigate whatever happened in the past.
It's to make sure that as we, as members, go forward, that no member of this body gives their colleagues outside of the legislature access to state resources, and that no member of this body allow assets to be used in a way that was not intended by the general public. That is what this bill is about. I call it a good governance bill. We are putting parameters around ourselves. It will impact the entire legislative branch. So how did I get here? Members, I've passed out a sheet which is intended for your use to see what I saw and why I brought this forward. In early spring of 2025, I noticed that there were individuals that I was familiar with who had state emails, were using a House district phone number, and they were using the address of the office building. And I thought, why? Why is this happening? I have moved on from why did that happen to thinking about this from a House safety, security, asset protection lens. We know that since June 14th, we receive emails that come out to all House emails. If someone outside of our body has a House email, they would also be receiving those security updates. When someone uses an @housemn.gov or @senatemn.gov, it gives credence to that individual. And while this individual may be known to us and trusted by us, once the email is given, we have no control over it. And that individual could use it for nefarious reasons. I'm not saying that happened in the past tense. I'm saying looking forward, right? We need to protect the integrity and security of the body. That is what this bill is about. When I saw that outside individuals had been given emails and use of the House district phone number, I was really shocked. So I did do my work. I wrote to IT. I wrote to the commissioner, or to the admin. I looked into whether these individuals had some contractual basis for receiving these emails, addresses, and use of our House address. And there was no obligation on the House part to provide this. So I don't want to impugn motives, but I do want us to protect our body, the entire legislative body, going forward. I also looked at what we require of the executive branch and what we put in statute for the executive branch. And it is very clear under Subdivision 4 that use of state property, an employee shall not use or allow the use of state time, supplies, or state-owned or leased property and equipment for private use. It is only to be used for the interest of the state. And so I want us, the House, the legislature, to hold ourselves to those same standards. It really is about honesty, integrity, responsibility, all of the things that we have said in this committee. And I'm asking for a roll call vote. And I would like for you to stand with me and say that in our body, we hold ourselves accountable to using the assets of the public for the good of the public as it is intended. House district phone numbers are only for use with constituents. That's what we do with them. They don't belong to the legislator. they belong to the people of the district. The building is not our space to allow our friends to use. The building is the state's asset and the place for the people. I don't know how to say it any clearer, but we must be responsible and we must clean this up. Members, I ask for a yes vote.
And I appreciate the thoughtful way that was laid out. I know most of us think about from a business perspective. We want to follow good best practices going forward, and I also appreciate the forward-looking approach to your bill. Is there any member discussion on the bill? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Cleaborn, a little bit confused, or at least I am a little bit confused. Our email addresses are public. When people write to us, they use our state email address. Our phone numbers, in many instances, are out there for the public. Mm-hmm. So is your intent to say to members that we cannot use it for private business or for the public to be careful not to use mn.gov, housemn.gov, for their purpose? Not quite sure what the exact purpose is.
Chair Cleaborn.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson, for the question. So the public, of course, can write to us. They can call us. This is about how we interact with the systems, who we give access to the systems, right, to the space. Of course, people come. The building is open. But this was a member who allowed business associates to use House district phone number for a purpose other than constituent contact. That is not what that number is for.
Thank you. All right. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. I like this bill. I think there was just a couple questions to clarify. We've had similar discussion in the realm of non-legislators having wide access to the revisor's office on our behalf. Half the time, you know, we have a backlog in the revisor's office, and other people outside are, yeah, I talked to this legislator later or that legislator, and they're pumping out a bunch of bills in the revisor's office, and legislators may or may not have granted approval, and it's kind of loose in terms of structure. That's not addressed in here. Is that something we should incorporate as well, or just to ask the author kind of her thoughts on that?
Chair Cleaborn.
Thank you very much, Representative Kosnick, for the question. And I think it's important for you to realize that the body will be responsible for writing the rules about what it. We're not setting the rules in place per se. We are directing the legislative entity to establish those rules on how that can best be done. And I know I don't speak for the revisor, that's not my space, but I do know that the revisor has sent us emails saying, please do not do that. Allow us to do the work that we need to get the legislative work done. And I know that if I'm working with an entity, I will say to the revisor, this is my request. This is what I need to have done by this date certain to get the work done.
Thank you. All right, thank you for that. And just as a clarification, I do know it has been fairly standard practice for some years that often, and particularly in recent years, that our leadership, I believe on both sides of the aisle, has directed us that we must have a personal hand in making those recommendations to the revisor that we not allow unfettered access to folks outside of the body, mostly because we want to prevent our staff from getting stressed out and burned out. We don't want to do that to them. We do also have Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And my curiosity goes to the fact that it's not unusual for a relative or a spouse to visit for a day. And there are some meetings of which you wouldn't bring them along, so maybe they stay in your office. And they happen to get a call on their phone. that has to do with their employment, the office space restriction is to not allow anyone but a member or staff to utilize that space. But if they're sitting there and answer their phone, they're utilizing that space. So I hope there could be some clarifying language, because I think it's good that we have people visit us, allow our families to understand what's going on by being here. So that's the one little gray area I think that might need clarification. Thank you.
Chair Cleaborne.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Quam. I think in this day of 2026, most people have cell phones that they use. I would say that that could be something that when the rules are written, incidental use by a member for personal incidental, but I do not believe, and I'm going to say this very clearly, I would never allow my husband to use my office phone. That's just me. Yeah.
Madam Chair, at no point did I even infer, because I specifically said they get a call on their phone.
Their cell phone? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Because I was referring it directly to the office space utilization.
I see what you're saying.
And that's specifically what I was looking at, that technically you'd be in violation for that. I take offense that you would think
I would like to correct the record. I misunderstood what you were saying. That was my misunderstanding. I thought you said they were in your office and they use the office phone to take a call. That was my misunderstanding. Of course, this is the people's house. We expect the public to come into it. We expect the public to use it. Our spouses are, in fact, public, right? And so, yes, they could come into your office during regular scheduled time for legislative business. What I would say is not prohibited, what I would say would be prohibited by this is that my spouse, your spouse, anybody else's spouse could not conduct their business using our house phone. They could not conduct their business that had nothing to do with the legislature using state assets. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping to fix.
Thank you. I do also want to remind us to go through the chair. But I thank you for that clarification. I also wanted to mention here that we do want to make a distinction that I believe the bill here, as outlined, is suggesting that we do not want state resources, taxpayer-funded resources, being assigned to outside entities. Certainly that would not preclude a spouse or a child or someone who's visiting the Capitol to use your space when they are visiting or things like that. And I think we it's generally accepted practice that we do allow for visitors to use those spaces, but we do not assign that space to them as a taxpayer-funded resource. So,
Madam Chair.
Yes, Matt, Chair Cleaver.
Thank you. So when we allow an outside entity to use our mailing address, and if they were to mail someone something with our Minnesota House of Representatives Centennial Office Space, they might lend credibility to whatever that ask is inside the envelope. If we allow an outside entity to use our @house.mn.gov email address, the ask might be considered official state ask. That's the confusion that I am trying to clarify here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we appreciate we do not want someone who is not a state employee to be interpreted as doing the business of the state. So I appreciate that. Representative Sexton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Please excuse this freshman question, but we have rules in the House. The Senate has rules, mm-hmm. and we hold ourselves to a higher standard based on those rules. Was there any request for rules changes before we had to legislate ourselves to make rules changes?
Chair Cleaborne.
Thank you very much, Representative Sexton, for the question. This is, so the use of giving outside individuals our email addresses is not protocol. When checking with IT services for the House, this is not a standard practice. This was something that was directed from a leadership level. So if the normal practices would have been followed, this would not have happened. The sergeant's office was not contacted for use of the phone number. Admin was not consulted about the use of the house address. Normal procedures were bypassed. And so that is why if we are, I believe most of us know that our house phones are for housework. I think most of us know that we don't give friends and colleagues house emails. I think most of us know that. Yet that standard norm was breached. And so this provides clear guidelines to all staff that we don't do this here. This provides guidelines for all members. We don't do this here. There will be a consequence. Right now, we have no consequence, and it will be up to the body to determine what that consequence will be.
Thank you. Representative Sexton.
Thank you for that, Madam Chair. Chair Cleburne, that was interesting, but it did not answer my question. My question was specifically, was there an approach or attempt made to pull leadership together to address this concern through rulemaking within our House rules prior to developing legislation? I believe, just as a leading answer, we should have gone that route before we come up with legislation upon ourselves.
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you, Representative Sexton, and I appreciate that's what you would do. I wrote a bill. I did consult leadership when I first saw it, and I was asked to keep the priorities of the House front and centered, not to let this slide, but in 2025, my priority was getting a budget across the finish line. I had, and I shared this with Chair Nash, a meeting set with Speaker Hortman, Speaker Emerita Hortman, for the week that she was assassinated. So under normal circumstances, yeah, I would have done that. But knowing that it takes a long time to get a bill drafted, as you well know, I reached out to House Research. I asked what the rules were, what we have. I received a packet of really great information. I mean, our email and computer policy, it's old. Our code of conduct, nothing. This is a serious breach. You are a military man. You know you don't use government assets this way. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Representative Sexton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree, and that's where I started with my conversation of the rules we develop for the House, which are separate from the rules developed by the Senate, holds us to a higher standard. And in fact, the way I read the enforcement, it tells us to fix our rules. I personally believe we should go down that route first before we legislate ourselves to go down that route anyway.
Madam Chair.
All right. Chair Cleburne.
Thank you. I'm going to cut this really short. We already have written legislation for the executive branch to tell them what to do. It's time for us to write legislation to tell ourselves what to do.
All right. Thank you for that. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Cleburne, and I think I just heard the answer that I was going to ask. The executive branch, do they follow this already? They cannot do any of this?
It is in, if you look at 43A, you will see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Chair Cleburne.
Is there any member discussion?
Okay,
no.
All right. Okay. All right. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and just to Representative Quam's comments quickly from earlier, yeah. It does look like on 1.17, unless I'm misunderstanding, that it is talking about a non-member temporarily occupying an office in space. So it actually does address that. So to me, this bill's just not ready for this committee right now.
Madam Chair.
Chair Cleveland.
Temporarily occupy. A visit, a day visit, is not temporary occupying. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Vice Chair Davis.
I would say that's a pretty broad, leaving it up to someone to interpret. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I will just say, before we move to Chair Nash, I do want to mention here that what we're talking about, you know, from a business practice is pretty standard practice in any business, not even just the legislature. It's generally very understood that we don't assign office space or emails or things like that that are paid for on the company dime to people who do not work within the company. The same would be true here in the legislature. And I think it's fair and appropriate that we as legislators make sure that we are doing the right thing. And clearly there was a breakdown here. I appreciate that this is looking forward and saying we've evaluated our process, we found it lacking, and we are going to do better in the future, and we're gonna hold ourselves accountable. And I think we've had a lot of conversations in this body about being good stewards of the people's money, of being accountable, and that starts with us as legislators too. So I just want to like take the temperature down a little bit, but remind us to ground ourselves in that this is good best practice, whether you're in a private business or whether you're in the legislature. But it's more important, I would suggest, as legislators, because the resources we are using are not ours. They belong to the state of Minnesota. They are paid for by the taxpayers, and as such, we must be good stewards of them. So adding extra belt and suspenders to make sure that we're doing that the right way and holding ourselves accountable seems like a very fair and reasonable ask. And with that, I'm going to move to Chair Nash to give his closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Cleburne, you and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. I would direct you all in your packets. You've got a copy of the House Rules, Section 8. Article 8, my apologies, administration of the House. Administration of the House has a lot of the things that we should be doing in there. Chair Cleburne, you and I talked about this. I believe that it should be put into House rules. Let the Rules Committee dictate what's going to happen here. You know, I would direct your attention to something that happened in the other body yesterday. There was a large Senate rules change that probably got splashed across the news. You might have seen it. But I believe that the administration of the House is the purview of the House, and I will quote somebody who we all respect, Patrick Duffy Murphy, who says, why put something into statute that can be handled in the rules? And I firmly believe that. Now, there's merit to having this conversation, but I think that the conversation needs to be had in the Rules Committee. We don't need to legislate something that we're going to wind up putting in the Rules Committee anyway. So my recommendation is a no vote on this, since you decided to roll call this. Mm-hmm. I think that if we're going to do something around this, and there's merit to this conversation, but it should be done in the rules of the House, much like they tackled in the Senate yesterday. So with that, I would recommend a no vote.
Madam Chair.
All right. Closing comments, Chair Cleburne.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that, but I would like to remind every member this is not just about the House. We might adopt great rules, but this is also about the Senate, and it's about everybody who's under the legislative branch. And what I would say is that we will be adopting rules. That's what the law says, must adopt rules to implement this section. I am not going around that. Members, we have an opportunity to protect the integrity of the body. This is forward-looking. The individuals who were given email addresses knew well this was not their place of, excuse me,
just be brief.
Are we ready to move on?
So
have the floor.
I'm going to ask, there is another member who asked to speak after the chairs. That is not standard practice. There were actually two members that did. The first I missed and has decided not to speak out of respect for Chair Nash. And I'm grateful, Chair Nicolai, that you did so. We have another person on the list. I'm going to respectfully ask that maybe we leave this because I do want to, we've already had comments from both chairs, and I just want to be respectful of our process and our time. And so I would not normally say that, but I would ask that maybe we both.
I was in the middle of my closing.
Yes.
And I had the floor, and the floor was disrupted. That is not acceptable. And I would ask that you please honor my time on the floor.
Absolutely. So if there, is that all right with you?
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Hold on. Can we let the chair continue? Thank you. Chair Cleavorn, please finish your closing.
Okay. So this has been a very robust conversation. I appreciate it. I have been hammered by members of this committee on social media about not standing up for transparency, accountability, all of those great things, because I wanted to make sure the OIG bill was right before it left our committee. I find it fascinating today, this conversation, when I am asking us to hold our own body, the legislative branch, accountable for what we do with the resources of the state of Minnesota. And I'm being told, don't put anything in law. Let us decide separately. Let us be the good stewards when we have already breached our own protocols. So, members, I'm going to ask for a yes vote. This is about upholding the integrity of our building. It's about good governance. It's about protection of resources. It's about when you see bright red flags, you see something, you say something, you do something. It is not okay what happened in this body. Members, I ask for a yes vote.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. I do want to apologize to you personally. It is not standard protocol for us to interrupt someone while they are doing their closing remarks. So we want to say our deepest apologies to you. With that, a roll call has been requested. We will go to a roll call vote at this time, and I will direct staff to take the roll.
Madam Chair, before you do that, could you remind us where this is, what the referral was for?
And the referral on this specific bill is to send it to the General Register.
I would like to make a motion to refer it to rules.
Excuse me, we vote on one
We're
motion.
In the midst of a roll call vote. I think we need to complete the vote first. Well, we did. I already directed staff to start it, so I'm going to let the roll call proceed.
Okay.
All right. Staff, if you'd take the roll, please.
Chair Cleavorn?
Aye.
Chair Cleavorn, aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Nash, nay. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Davis, nay. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, no.
Representative Anderson, nay. Representative Clardy?
Aye.
Representative Clardy, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Jones?
Jones, aye.
Representative Jones, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, nay. Representative Kosnick? Representative Kosnick, nay. Representative Kraft?
Aye.
Representative Kraft, aye. Representative Nicolai?
Aye.
Representative Nicolai, aye. Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Quam, no. Representative Sexton?
This should go to rules. I'm a no.
All right. Chair, there are 7 ayes, 7 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 7 nays, the rule is not adopted and it is laid over.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Chair Bonner. Can I ask that we let Representative Greenman go first, and then we'll come to you. Thank you.
I have another bill up in jobs.
And we are going to be, because we use so much time there, we're going to be very concise with the bill. Representative Greenman, we have House File 3093. Since you're not a member of the committee, I will move the bill up for consideration. You have a DE4. I will move the DE4 to be before the committee. Would you please discuss the DE4?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's nice to be back in State Gov. This House File 3093, the DE, it reflects the work of that I've been doing with admin, with MMB, a bit with Department of Labor and others over the last 9 months since I originally introduced the bill, and puts the bill in the shape I'd like it.
Thank you, and I understand you wanted a roll call. Is that correct? I will call a roll call. Roll call requested. Roll call will be granted. Okay. Sorry, we're moving on. All right, please go forward.
Do we need to adopt the DE?
We do. Oh. Yes. So I'm requesting a roll call on the DE4. Will you please take the roll? You know what? The bill will be the DE4 at the end of the day. We'll take the roll call at the end. I will suspend the roll call until we act. All members in favor of adoption of the DE to get the bill in the author's preferred state, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that was much faster. All right. Thank you. Representative Greenman, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I said, the DE and this bill adds a minimum eligibility criteria to the pre-risk assessment for grants in 16B. This bill implements a simple concept that entities that steal from the state government shouldn't be eligible for government grants. The policy is modeled after the responsible contractor requirements in 16C that mandate compliance with unemployment insurance laws, workers' compensation laws, tax and labor requirements for contractors and subcontractors of public projects that exceed $50,000. This bill bars any organization from receiving state grants if that entity or its subsidiary or related entities have been found to have violated Minnesota's misclassification law and related violations that skim money from public coffers. I learned about this gap in our pre-risk assessment framework while chairing the misclassification task force. In the 2024 OLA report on misclassification, found that in addition to the impacts on workers and other companies, misclassification affects the state and federal government finances through, and I quote, lower program and tax revenues, increased reliance on government services. In 2025, North Star Policy Institute estimated that misclassification fraud cost the state government between $506 million and $1.3 billion, which includes unrealized state income taxes, payments in the unemployment trust fund, and workers' compensation premiums. And last year, in a bipartisan vote, we passed a bill that will allow us to actually get a state report about how much that's costing the state in the future. And while we have advanced policies at other committees to enforce and deter misclassification, it's also critical that when an organization breaks these laws and rips off the state, that they're barred from getting state dollars from other grant programs. That is something we've talked a lot about in the Fraud Prevention Committee, ensuring that we have policies and the vetting in place that prevent people getting caught from defrauding one public program from continuing to get money from another. This bill closes that gap in 16B by adding these minimal eligibility criteria to the current framework. It identifies and disbars potential grantees in violation of Minnesota law. It requires certification of compliance that a potential grantee is in good legal standing and paying their taxes, is paying and in compliance with Minnesota state programs, workers' comp, UI, paid leave, does not have repeated state or federal labor violations, prevailing wage violations, wage theft violations over the three-year period, does not have an organizational leadership that has been criminally convicted of failure to pay state government, state funds, medical assistance fraud, and other fraud crimes, and has not already been barred from state, federal, or any state agency in the state. This minimum criteria applies to potential grantees and their related entities, which we added that language on technical assistance from Department of Admin, who wanted to make sure that we what some of their experience was that people, if you had an issue, if you had a violation, you may construct yourself in a different way in order to continue getting grants, and we want to avoid that circumvention to prevent bad actors from getting around legal restrictions. Misclassification fraud is fraud, and it cheats workers, and it also, and I think importantly to this bill, steals from public programs, and the bill protects those public programs and ensures that when we've done our enforcement action, we don't let those folks continue to get resources and grants. This is a common sense part of our shared work to stop fraud and stop our public programs from being abused and to ensure that fraudsters who cheat our taxpayers are cut off from other sources of funding. And with that, Madam Chair, I do not have any testifiers. I have admin and DLI are here in case people have questions.
Okay, I did have that Betsy Hayes wanted to testify. Is that incorrect?
Oh, that's sure.
Yeah, no, that's great. Okay,
oh.
That's
for questions.
Just available for questions. Thank you so much. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Sexton.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Greenman, thank you for bringing this bill forward. If one word would describe the DE4, I would say comprehensive, so thank you for that. This bill, combined with our strong OIG bill that we've recently passed out of committee, really, to me, bookends both deterring and prosecuting fraud. So thank you for that. I do have a couple of questions. I'll refer you to DE4, page 5, line 5.26. It's minor, but I think it puts us in a bit of a conflict of interest situation. So where we start with...
Excuse me, could you make the reference one more time, please?
Sure, 5.26. The very first word is agency.
Madam Chair, can I just clarify? You're talking about the underlying statute?
No, the DE4.
Sorry, but...
The DE4, line 526, where it starts with the word agency.
I see that. I'm just clarifying. This bill does not make any change to that, so you're talking about the underlying statute in law?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But I'm asking for clarification, and possibly we would have the opportunity to make the bill stronger if we made a change.
Did you prepare an amendment?
I did not, since I just read that last night.
Okay.
With the
I would encourage you. The bill is going to
ways, but
please go ahead,
Madam Chair. I am happy to. I've been talking to Representative Schultz and a few others who are on the Fraud Prevention Committee. I'd be happy to work on any of this language to make it stronger, especially if we share the value. I am less familiar with the part of the statute that I am not changing in this bill, so but look forward to that. And it is going to ways and would love the conversation.
Absolutely.
Representative Sexton.
Thank you. So I'm asking, and obviously you don't have to give an immediate answer as you consider this, but the part where it says agency must either create a plan to satisfy the remaining concerns with a grantee or must not award the grant. I think that puts us in a situation where we're coaching and really we should be evaluating. I think that's the basis of your bill. So I would recommend scratching, starting with must either create a plan to satisfy the remaining concerns with the grantee and somehow just clean up the language so we just stay in the evaluation of the grant and not get ourselves into a coaching, because I don't think we could even capture that in a fiscal note. We have plenty of consultants that they can hire to refer to help them out.
Thank you very much, Representative Sexton, and you've noted that. Right, that would be a conversation for a future time. Any other questions? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Kind of more of a statement, but last week we had a bill, and I don't have the bill number. Representative Anderson had a bill to not renew licenses to those that had in current statute. There's a whole list of statutes that if you are found guilty of breaking those statutes, she suggested adding a few others that you do not renew a license if you're guilty of a couple additional things with. Trying to remember, it was Medicare fraud or what welfare, and then frauding, transactional fraud.
I would encourage you to take a look at that, and as you go to Ways and Means, something that could be incorporated into this bill. It did not pass out of this committee, unfortunately, but I think it, the spirit and the intent are very similar, and so I would hope that you would consider that, or maybe we'll talk about it offline and with Representative Anderson and see if that's something that you would be agreeable to as well.
Thank you. Representative Lugar-Nicolai.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for this bill, which I think is excellent and is another continued effort in reducing misclassification and hopefully eliminating it in our state. I think it's important to keep in mind that misclassification, when it involves underpaying folks after the point of having secured the contract, is, of course, a crime against both the state and the workers. When it involves underbidding, it's also a crime against other bidders in the case of competitive grants or other types of procurement. And so I think this is really critical legislation, and I'm so glad that you're bringing it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. The motion is to re-refer the bill as amended to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and you are on your way as amended. Next, Representative Bonner. Representative Bonner, when you're ready, if you'll move House File 3629.
Yes, I would like to move House File 3629 before the committee and recommend moving this to the general register. And I'll ask my testifier, if you don't mind, to come up.
Okay.
All right.
Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Hayes.
All right.
Representative Bonner, would you like to discuss the bill briefly, and then we'll ask for Ms. Hayes' testimony?
Absolutely. I'm going to be very brief and let Ms. Hayes be the star of the show here today. But House File 3629 builds on that theme of grants management and trying to work at how we can be more efficient and prevent potential fraud, as well as strengthen protections. So this bill is from admin, and it makes technical changes to improve the state's grant process. Broadly, the bill does three things. It clarifies that grants be terminated for both an individual named person as well as an entity when they are convicted of a criminal offense. It also redefines admin's authority to more narrowly approve exceptions to policy requirements and kind of tightens that up. And further, it provides additional whistleblower protections in grant-related cases. And with that, in a nutshell, I'm going to go ahead and pass that over to Assistant Commissioner Betsy Hayes from the Department of Administration to build on that.
And Deputy Commissioner, when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you. And again, good morning, Chair Cleburne and Chair Nash and members of the committee. Again, my name is Betsy Hayes. I'm an Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration. House File 3629 is known in our area as our technical bill. Provides a handful of changes to the grants-related statutes in Chapter 16B. One of the changes just involves a citation correction, and the others help improve grant administration. Just quickly walking through the sections. Section 1, this is a change that refines the ability to approve policy exceptions on a more granular level. Generally, an exception request would relate to an individual grant, not necessarily the entire program. So that's why that change is made in Section 1. Section 2, that language deleted on lines 2.14 and 2.15, that removes language that allows sharing identifying information about a person who's reporting fraud or waste in the grants process. We want to remove any hindrances or provisions that may give an employee pause to report something. So this change is made to promote and encourage reporting. Section 3 is the citation correction that I mentioned earlier. And then finally, Section 4 provides a definition of recipient, which was not previously defined. This helps add clarity and captures the individuals within the organization, given that it's most likely that it would be an individual and not the organization that would receive the conviction. So we think that overall these are very helpful and practical changes in our grants administration, and we appreciate the support, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Are there any other testifiers? Yes, please. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Can I hook up my computer?
I do not know if there's a way to do that.
Madam Chair, is there a way that I can hook up my computer?
Technical assistance, can you help him? Okay. One moment, please. And while we're connecting to technology, we ask that you please keep your testimony to no more than 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. One moment, pardon?
Right. Okay. My name is Nathaniel M. Olson. I'm a disability advocate for the state of Minnesota. I'm going to blow this up, but everybody can see this.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Everybody see? Mm-hmm. So right here, this is our federal grants from the federal government, $42 billion, I'm sorry. Other revenues, $79 billion. Deputy Commissioner, if the chair doesn't mind, I have a question.
You have to go through the chair.
Do you mind if I ask the Deputy Commissioner?
You have to ask me the question.
Madam Chair, do you mind if I ask the Deputy?
You have to ask me the question.
Okay.
And she will direct the question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Do you know where the other revenue of the $79 billion is coming from? We have it right here on this graph.
Excuse me. Can you please tell me, can you just give me a little context as to what this is about?
This is the graph.
And I would like you, just please, one moment. Okay, I'm sorry. Can we take a pause for 1 minute, please? There is no video camera allowed during committee. That's all right. No, it's okay. And you know what? We jumped right into committee. We didn't reference the rules this morning, so that's on me, but we are not allowed to video or otherwise use cameras during committee. Let's reset. Would you please state your name for the record again, please, for me, and then help me understand the basis of the question that you were trying to get to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Like I said, I'm Nathaniel M. Olson. I'm a disability advocate for the state of Minnesota. This is a graft of what is happening in the state of Minnesota. These are the funds that the federal government has given us. Mm-hmm. Approximately, we've had $21.9 billion here.
Okay.
Right here, if we go down to the bottom of the graph, federal grants from the federal government was $42 billion. My question is, the other revenue is $79 billion. Where is that money coming from?
Okay. Ms. Hayes, I think this is really a management and budget question as opposed to admin, but do you have an answer for that question, Ms. Hayes?
Madam Chair, respectfully, no, I do not have an answer for that, but would be happy to work with Mr. Olson to try to guide him to some answers that he may be seeking.
Okay. Thank you very much. I realized I had my microphone off. So I ask you if you had an answer to this question, and you do not, but you offered to work with Mr. Olson to get answers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Olson, do you have more testimony that you would like to offer?
Okay. So $79 billion in other revenue. If we looked at the federal funds compares on one state of the resources, if you guys see, taxes was 57%. All other was 9%. Federal funds were 35%. right here, where does the money go to? 39.7% is K-12. Public safety, I was very surprised, is very low, 5.3%. Property taxes, 8.3%. Higher ed, 7.5%. And then HHS is 33.1%.
That is correct. That this is the budget that of the state. I understand
yes.
that. Can you please help me understand?
So my question is, mm-hmm. where's the other revenue for the $79 billion that are here that is stated in that graph that I had okay. in the state of Minnesota, for the state of Minnesota?
So I thank you very much for being here today, and thank you very much for your testimony and for asking the question. I will ask that Ms. Hayes, if you would please connect Mr. Olson to the appropriate individuals at admin or MMB that could actually walk him through where the pass-through dollars are, where federal funds flow through, and how that moves. I would greatly appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Olson, for your testimony. We have one more bill that we need to get to, so I'm going to move on. But Mr. Olson, I'm happy to have a conversation with you at any time in my office to further answer and to make sure all of your questions are answered.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. Just for the record and to clarify, this bill is about process improvement for the grants process as outlined by the Department of Administration. It is not tied specifically to any specific budget area, et cetera. I will leave it to you, Madam Chair, if there are additional questions. I'm not sure there's anything else I can respond to in that.
Thank you. Okay. Members, we need to move to a vote. Were there any questions from the members? Okay. I will renew your motion, or would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to very briefly close and then I will renew my motion. I just want to clarify that this bill is to ensure that we hold folks accountable, if they have a commission of a crime. It also enhances and strengthens whistleblower protections, and it improves our process around requirement exceptions and narrows that scope. It's basically a good government bill to make sure that we are holding folks accountable and doing the right things to be efficient within our process. And so with that, I would renew my motion that we move House File 3629 to the General Register.
Thank you. And with that, members, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and House File 3629 is re-referred to the General Register. Representative Frederick, I'd like to welcome you to the committee, and I will move House File 4356 be before the committee for it to be re-referred to the General Register. When you, we have a testifier. Are you here to testify? All right. So, Representative Frederick, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. So, as I'm sure everybody knows, DCT became its own thing July 1st of last year, and we are still finding things that we need to separate out in-state statute from underneath DHS. So back in 1997, the legislature allowed DHS to categorize some employee positions as unclassified. And when those employees then, some of them anyways, transferred over to DCT, when DCT became its own entity, that same authorization did not transfer with it. And so this legislation, it aims to address that. If it does not pass, what that means is people who have been potentially doing their same job that they're doing now, they've been doing it for decades potentially, they would have to reapply for the same job that they're doing. They'd have to serve under the probationary status again, potentially, and restart that whole kind of process. And we're talking about some of the jobs such as doctors, where you have, I think, 36 out of 38 doctors in DCT would be impacted by that. And they're already hard enough to come by, so that would be an opening for them to seek other employment. So really, we want to just keep people where they're at, and that's what this bill aims to do. And I brought someone, a technical expert, with, if the committee has any questions.
Thank you very much for your really brief summary. Members, do you have any questions for Representative Frederick? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that, I will renew my motion that House File 4356 be re-referred to the General Register. And all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and you are on your way to the General Register.
Thank you.
That is our last bill. It's an interesting thing to be a chair of a committee and to think about the responsibility of the state over your own personal desires, right? So I am going to make a motion to reconsider laying over my bill, House File 4172, and instead of laying it over, that we would move it to rules. And while it doesn't do all of the things that I would want it to do, I really do not want this to die today. So I will, so I am putting a motion to reconsider House File 4172. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? I, Chair Cleavorn, move House File 4172. Do I have an amendment? There was no amendment. To the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Madam Chair.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 4172 will be moved to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Next, I want to just let everyone know our committee meeting will be on Tuesday, April 9th, 2026. Pardon? Tuesday, April 7th. I have it wrong. This has been a wild day today. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 7th. And with that, members, we are adjourned.